I am an alcoholic. My name's Joyce.
Hi, Joyce.
So wonderful to be here. This is my second meeting today because my home group had their anniversary. It was just wonderful. I see somebody who was also there. AA is the best thing. Coming to AA is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'm such a contented person today, at peace with myself and most of the rest of the world. Doesn't mean I don't get angry from time to time, but basically my life is just pretty much on an even keel. You know, gone are the days of the big ups and big downs, and it's not so flat, but I'm dead. You know, just a little sort of wavy, you know? Anyway, this is my second time in AA. I had my first attempt at sobriety in 1980. My sobriety date is the 14th of April, 1984. I have not had a drink since that day. And I'll back up and tell you a little bit of my history. I'm the oldest of three children. Both my parents are still alive. I'm 65 years old, and my parents have been married 66 years. So I don't know too many people who can say that. And one day my mother listened to an elderly lady like herself being interviewed on TV, and she was also married over 60 years. And the interviewer was so amazed, she said, 60 years? Did you ever consider divorce? And the woman said, never, but murder every day. My mother said, you know, she's right. I could identify with her, you know. So as you can tell, there was always a lot of laughter in our home. You know, when I first came to AA, I thought I had been so abused and all this stuff, the way they talked to us, and today I have a very, very different take on that. I realized that my parents were two kids who got married. My mother was 17 years old, and my father was 21. The war was on. I was born a year later. My sister was born 14 months later, and the responsibilities, you know, like, and I never took very well to responsibility. I was a good student only because I lived in a world of books to escape the arguments at home, mostly because of lack of money, you know. And, you know, today my parents' biggest concern is how they're going to invest their money. So you never really know where you're going to land up in life, and I'm very, very grateful for them. So, my first drink was, I was 14 years old, and I didn't really have any friends. Like I said, I lived in a world of books to escape friction. I was never good at asserting myself, dealing with conflict. And my sister was the direct opposite of me. She is shorter, blonde, and blue-eyed. I was tall, dark-haired, and brown-eyed. And I was introverted and she was extroverted. She went skiing, she played tennis, she went to dances. I didn't do any of that sort of stuff. So my father wanted me to make friends. And one night a couple of boys, there were always boys calling on my sister. And I was quite overweight when I was a teenager. So one day my father said, out of what I realized today was loving concern, at the time I thought he was just on my case. So, you know, he said, Joycey, why don't you go out with Judy? I'd love to see you make some friends. So I just thought, oh, I'll get him off my case, you know. So off my sister and I went with these two boys. One of them had his dad's car. I mean, I'm 65 years old and I was 14, so that's how long ago it was. In the 50s, you know, you drove around in a car, maybe had a little smooch up on the mountain lookout. I mean, it was just pretty harmless, you know. But one of the boys had a jug of wine. Now this was my chance to make some friends, and I learned something about myself when I came to AA. I'm a people pleaser, so you know, they passed around the bottle of wine, there was no way I was going to refuse. My sister refused it. She said, it smells like shit, I'm not going to have any. And when it came to me, whatever, right? So I just started, and I loved right from the get-go what it did for me, because it released a person inside me that I did not know was there. I was animated, I told jokes, everybody laughed. You know, I thought I was the soul of wit, but unbeknownst to me, I was just sliding deeper in the gin, and I was slurring my words, and I was not a vision of loveliness. I just thought I was the cat's ass, let me tell you, you know. Anyway, so my parents were very strict, and we had to be home at 11 o'clock, and the boys drove us home, and we were home on time. And long story short, I passed out and fell on the floor. And that's where my father, I made a huge noise, because I was very overweight. And my father came running out of the bedroom, and there I was, 14, dead drunk, and passed out on the floor. So my father picked me up off the floor, and he said, "Oh my God, Joyce has been drinking." So, you know, I told the first lie of my alky life. You know, I kind of was stunned, but I said, "Oh no, I had one glass of wine." Well, you know, try and pull that on your father when you're, he just knew it was a pile of BS, so he put me to bed. And that's where I came to. I later learned to say in Alcoholics Anonymous and discovered that I had peed my bed. So that was my first blackout. And I got a lecture from my parents. They told me they were ashamed of me, and oh, I just wanted to die. So I made it my business that morning that that was not ever going to happen to me again. And I was going to learn how to drink like a lady. So today I know that I was alcoholic right from the get-go. The very idea that I wanted to drink like a lady after peeing my bed to me is so outrageous today when I look at it from a sober perspective. So, needless to say, I never did learn how to drink like a lady. And the last time I wet my bed as a result of drinking, I was 41. And the man I was living with was in bed with me at the time. And with the full knowledge, I was ashamed of myself. He was anything but amused. And with the full knowledge that drinking was what had made me pee my bed, I drank again that day. And it was only after I came to AA and stayed this time around in 1984 that I heard a speaker say, "You know, I used to think I enjoyed drinking. And I discovered in Alcoholics Anonymous I was addicted to drinking." Huge difference. It made such an impact on my life, you know, because I was still at conflict with the moral issue. That was very early in my sobriety. Anyway, I think I've said earlier that I came in 1980. I did all the normal things. I got married. I got married at the little church just down the street here, Church of the Advent, it was called in those days. And I was married at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I was dressed in all my finery, and my parents had a limousine for me, and I got in the limousine, and I wasn't the least bit nervous. I just thought, "Oh, geez, you know, bring on the party. This is a great day." And I wasn't the least bit nervous. And the limousine driver said to me, "All brides are nervous, and for that reason I keep a little Mickey here in the glove compartment. How would you like a drink?" And I said, "Oh, sure," you know, so I had a little snort. And I don't think he had that Mickey for nervous brides. I think he needed a Mickey himself. So if I ever see a man in AA who says, "I used to be a limousine driver," I'm going to run up to him. You know, "Are you the one who, you know?" Anyway, after my husband and I were married, we got back in the limousine, and my husband was appalled because he could smell alcohol on me. And he said, "Joyce, it's 11 o'clock in the morning, and you've been drinking." So same thing I said to my husband that I had said to my father when I was 14. "Oh, I just had one drink," because to me, one drink was not drinking, you know? Anyway, we were married for 16 years. And when my husband was 40, he developed a very aggressive form of cancer that was in his thigh. And he lived for almost 5 years after several surgeries and a lot of chemotherapy and radiation. And on the 4th of August, 1979, we were at our cottage up north. And I was sitting on the screen porch, my regular Saturday routine, with a bottle of wine and making an attempt to read the paper. And my husband came out with his snorkel and his fins, and he said to me, Joyce, you feel like going snorkeling with me today? And I said, no, I'm going to sit here and drink my wine. And later that day, my husband had a stroke and died. And those were the last words my husband ever heard me say to him. I'm not coming with you. I'm going to sit here and drink my wine. So now I had guilt on top of shame, and booze was always my solvent for whatever was disturbing me. And now my husband had spoken to me many times about my drinking. He didn't like it and told me about it, and I never paid any attention to him. He had told me one time that I drank like one of the guys at work, and they called him an alcoholic. And when he told me that, I jumped off my couch about this high and came at him. He told me the cords were standing out in my neck. And my husband was a big man. He reared back. He was afraid. And I was really starting to go around the bend now. So after my husband died, there was nobody there to tell me what to do and how much he didn't like it and yickety-yack, and that's how I thought of it at the time. I never realized people were talking to me like that because they loved me and they were concerned about me. And it was only after I hit these doors and I learned that alcoholism is a disease in which our thinking becomes distorted. And that was one of the distortions that had taken hold of me. People were on my case, you know. And so about 3 months after my husband died, I was dating this fellow who dumped me after 3 dates because I got drunk. And this nice man had 3 children. The last thing he needed in his life was a lady who was drunk in front of his children. So he dropped me like a hot potato, and my poor tender heart was just broken, you know. Now, my husband had been putting up with this crap for 16 years, and I never gave it a moment's consideration. But this guy dumped me after 3 dates, and like I was just heartbroken, you know. So very shortly after that, I was at my dentist's office, and I didn't know what had happened. Why? I just knew that I was drunk. So I was at my dentist's office, and I was reading a Time magazine, and there was an article about alcoholism in there. Higher power, you know, no coincidences. And in that article, they had some of our famous questions, and one of which was, have you ever had a total memory loss as a result of drinking? And that one really hit me. Because in that article, it went on to explain that that is called a blackout. Or the words they used were alcoholic amnesia. Well, that really did it for me, because that was the first time I ever heard alcoholic and memory loss attached. Made such an impact on me. So it said further on in the article, if I could answer even one of the questions, you know, you drink in the morning. Well, at that point I was not drinking in the morning. Have you lost time from work? I had actually, but it was like a convenient forgetfulness, you know. But that one about the alcoholic amnesia had such a meaning, a personal meaning for me. Because shortly before my husband died, people told me I went places, did things. I had no idea what the hell we were talking about. So it said in there, if I could answer one of those questions, it would be a good idea if I called Alcoholics Anonymous. So I did. And Big John, who's a retired policeman, who's quite well known around Montreal, was the first person who I spoke to in AA, and he said, the old timers are wonderful, and I just want to talk about it, you know. I just wanted to bend his ear. I certainly didn't want to do it. I just wanted to get information. And he said, oh, you want to go to a meeting? There's one. It's Monday night. There's one at 8:30 at Belmore. I'll have 2 ladies, ladies meet at the door. And he hung up, you know. So, you know, but he said magic words, nice ladies, you know. I thought, well, curiosity is something, sometimes a wonderful thing. You know, I was real curious, you know, because in my mind it was just the dregs of society who wound up here. But, you know, the higher power works in mysterious ways. So I went to my first meeting at Belmore and NDG, and he was as good as his word, and a couple of nice ladies met me at the door. one of whom was named Joyce, oddly enough. And I went to those meetings for about 3 months. People were kind to me. The ladies called me. I don't think I ever called them, but they called me. I went home and read the literature. And, you know, today I realize that God knows me so intimately. He knows that I needed a little sort of preview. It was not my time. And my sponsor's fond of saying that there are the usual three elements into getting sober, one of which is honesty, the second of which is open-mindedness, and the third of which is willingness. But my sponsor says there's a fourth element, and it's timing. It was not my time, but I had a little bit of a preview of what a sober life could be like. And I heard lots of speakers talk about hitting bottom, God and a higher power, and it just went right over my head. And actually, I was quite the little snot because some of those people told stories of having been to jail, and my attitude was, oh my God, if I went to jail, I'd do something about my drinking. And other people said they'd wreck their cars. Well, I mean, hey, I'd really do something about it, you know. But not me, you know, and I was always the nicest dressed person there because I'm quite the little snob. And, you know, you had to know that I was just curious. I didn't come here for any other reason. I was just real curious, you know. Anyway, with that attitude, it was just a question of time before I drank again. And people here told me it's the first drink that makes you drunk. And I thought, there's no way, like, I get drunk when I've had too much, but it's not the first drink. So being the little scientist that I am, I went home and I had a little experiment. Because in my twisted mind, my distorted thinking mind, I thought when a real alcoholic drinks, they start foaming at the mouth and falling off chairs and stuff like that, you know, with the first drink. So I had a first drink and I looked in the mirror and, hey, I looked all right. It was such a successful experiment, I had a second drink. And by the third drink, I was looking all right, so I just kept right on drinking, and that's how it started, and I was just 4 more years. And it just got worse and worse and worse. I was not listening when they said it's a progressive illness. I was not listening. So a year after my husband died, needless to say, I just stopped coming to meetings because my little experiment was so successful. I didn't fall off the chair after the first drink, you know. And so I just kept right on drinking. And then, a year after my husband died, I was introduced to a man by some mutual friends. And his wife of 25 years had divorced him because she could no longer tolerate his drinking. And I just thought she had no sense of humor. Like, what the hell's the matter with her? You know, he suited me right down to the ground. And maybe 3 months, not more, after seeing this man, I was just not quite drinking in the mornings yet, but longing to drink in the morning because, hey, I had a job. You know, he didn't. He was a wealthy man, and he could just drink whenever the hell he wanted. That was my ambition, to be able to drink any the hell time I wanted, you know. So one day my boss called me in to his office and told me he was not pleased with my work. And he thought I should do something about it. So what I did was I quit. That was my solution to that problem. I don't need to take this shit, and I quit. And my wealthy boyfriend had an apartment, a condo in Freeport, and we went down there and played golf, and it was just one mad, drunken golf party. For, you know, it's just like we ate out 3 times a day, you know, if we weren't golfing and drinking, we were drinking and drinking, you know, and inviting people over for more drinks. And it was just like, I just thought it was great. Then it started getting real ugly. And the people I met my first time around in AA started making a lot of sense, like I was doing really crazy stuff. And one night while we were drinking, I fell off the bar stool. And the last thing I heard the bartender say as I was trying to, you know, get up off the floor was he called a couple of men over, you know how they whistle? Get her out of here. And now I come to AA meetings and people say, hi, Joyce, nobody ever talks to me like that. And if AA never did anything more for me than that, it would be all right, you know. Nobody ever says, get out of here. And another night we came home from some drinking. Who knows, every day was, you know, every day was just like every other day. We just drank all the time. And Bob didn't park the car the way I wanted. And in a drunken rage, I just totally lost it. And I started screaming at him to go back and park the car properly, or I was going to smack his face. And I just lost it. And I, you know, I had a moment of clarity. And I thought, like, Christ, Joyce, you're going nuts. You know, I mean, I like to see a car nicely parked. But you know, I'm not willing to scrap, and you know, like, it was just total insanity. It was like, so anyway, I went upstairs and I kind of cogitated on that, like, how important is it? And like, Bob just looked at me like, what happened to you, you know? But I was starting to really go insane from the booze. Anyway, not long after that, we were at a hotel in Naples, Florida. And, you know, the lady Joyce that I told you about my first time in AA. One night, she didn't have her car. That was in 1980. And she asked me if I'd drive her home. And this lady was dignified. She was educated. She was impeccably groomed. She was joyful. She was serene. And I just could not believe that this lady was alcoholic. Furthermore, she didn't seem the least bit ashamed of it. I mean, she wasn't standing on the corner and talking about it. They take you away for that kind of stuff, you know. But in these rooms, she was very open, honest, willing to help. Just a lovely, lovely person. So I said to her this night, you know, when I was driving her home, why did a nice lady like you come to Alcoholics Anonymous? And she said, because I just got sick and tired, Joyce, of being sick and tired. So on the 14th of April, 1984, I was drunk. I was in Naples, Florida. I was sitting at the bar. And it was just another drunken day, like every other day, for the last 3.5 years. And 4 years. And all of a sudden, I just looked up in the mirror in the bar. And I also was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I knew I couldn't live like that anymore. So whether I called out to God or not, I have no memory of that. I just knew I couldn't take it anymore. I stank, and I must have smelled like that every day. But that day, I could smell it on myself. And I was so appalled. I didn't look like that well-dressed person anymore because the dress I had on was dirty, and I knew it. But it was more important to get to the bar and have a drink than to worry about the stain on my dress. And I was platinum blonde at the time, and I was too sick or too drunk to go to the hairdresser, so I had two-tone hair. You know that kind that's black here and blonde there? And, you know, and they have to futz around with your hair, and I couldn't deal with it, so I didn't go to the hairdresser anymore. So I just said to the girl who was sitting beside me, I can't take it anymore. I've got to stop drinking. I can't live like this anymore. And I started to cry, and she walked me back to our room. And I don't know where Bob was. I was living with Bob. I don't know where he was. I know that he was there, but I just remember her and I walking back to the room, and I just cried the rest of the night. And so the next day, around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I called Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the only thing I could think of to do. And I said, where's the next meeting, and please tell me how to get there, because I was in a strange city. So they gave me directions, and Bob drove me to my first meeting this time around. And I walked into the first closed discussion meeting I ever went to. My first time around was Slick A. I mean, I knew if I went to a discussion meeting, I'd have to start. I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to sit in front and listen to speakers, get information, and I'm out of here, you know. But this time I went to the closed discussion meeting. I didn't even know it was a closed discussion meeting. And the first thing I saw was a big sign over the door that said, "You are not alone." And I know I must have stank, and nobody said anything, and it was very quiet, and I was just very dimly aware that everybody was being given a chance to say something in their turn. And so there was a little quiet time, and Bob, who had driven me to the meeting, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "It's your turn, Joyce, to say something if you'd like." So for the first time in my life, I said, "I'm an alcoholic. My name is Joyce, and this is my first time here." And I got such a wonderful welcome. And I left there, and I heard somebody say, "Big Book." And that's all I remember of my first meeting. Some of the signs, like one day at a time. But what people said, I have no memory at all. Just I heard somebody say, "Big Book." So the next day I went back, because this place was called the 24-Hour Club in Naples, and in my sort of fuzzed-up mind, I thought, must be open 24 hours a day. So first thing in the morning I was there, and I said, "You got a big book here?" And I got my first big book, and I think I paid $5 U.S. for it. So, you know, as I was walking out of the room, the guy was putting on the coffee. The meeting was not in session yet. I was pretty fuzzy, but I wanted that big book. So I was standing in the doorway with the book in my hand, and I was just seized with an urge to know more about alcoholism. And the book, true, as I'm standing here, the book fell open at that page, more about alcoholism. I read the first two pages, and I knew I was in the right place. Because my state of mind was described to a T, where it says that all drinking for the alcoholic leads with time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And that's where I was the night before, and I knew it, thank God. So, you know, John Mack, who was a longtime member here in Montreal, who is now at the big meeting in the sky, used to say those four words. If you take the first letter of each of those words, spell P-A-I-D, your dues are paid. Joyce, your dues are paid. You belong here. So that is how I started my journey in AA. And little by little, I learned that if nothing changes, then nothing changes. And I was told by the long-term members, if I do not change, I'm doomed to drink again. And that scared me half to death. So that gave me the courage to make the changes that I needed to make. And to look inside myself for my defects of character. One of which was I'm basically a very lazy person. I don't like to work, and I was living in a lap of luxury, and I didn't want to go to work. But it became increasingly clear to me through the traditions we are self-supporting, through our own contributions, that I could no longer suck a living out of somebody else. That was my responsibility. So I've got the courage. 3 years into sobriety, I mean, other people talk about instant stuff. That did not happen to me. It was little by little by little. And 3 years into sobriety, I finally called the company that I had walked out on and said, "I want to explain something." I called the personnel officer who I knew from my years there before, and I said, "I want to explain why I left the company so quickly. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm now in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was because of my drinking, but I am sober now. I've been sober for 3 years. And I would like to come back, if that's possible, if you will have me." And she said, "I have my husband's permission to say this, Joyce, whenever I think it will be useful. My husband's an Alcoholics Anonymous. I understand." So she said, I don't have any work for you now, but I will call you when something becomes available. And within a week, she had a little job for me. So I worked for a year and a half, 2 weeks here, 1 week there. I worked for a large multinational corporation, so there were people on vacation, people getting sick, and she'd call me and say, is this okay, Joyce? I got 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 days, whatever. And I just accepted whatever came along. And then finally, after a year and a half of this, I was hired on a full-time basis. And I accepted a job at two grades lower than the one I had left, and I was grateful to get it. Because I had learned through the traditions that lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. I didn't have to be the hot shit secretary. Just a job was good enough for this alkie. And I learned to live out and amend by being a responsible employee. Because sometimes saying I'm sorry is just fine. But I learned here that I have to put some muscle behind my mouth. If I say I'm sorry and I just don't change, it means diddly. So I had to make those changes. Another change that I had to make was it became increasingly clear to me that the man I was living with, who was drunk like I had been all the time, and becoming more and more violent, that I had to get out of there. I could not rely on this sick man to deliver healthy behavior for me because he just was not there mentally because of the drinking. And this is not a commentary on him because I really did love him and I'm absolutely sure he loved me. It's just that I needed to get away from that environment. I didn't feel that I would drink, but the possibility that I'd get five in the face was looking very clear to me because he had hit a man on the street and left him lying there and came home one night and thought that was really funny. And I thought, wow, Bob is just losing it now. I can't take that risk. So I left Freeport and, you know, that was a year and a half into sobriety. 3 years into sobriety, I started working. And I was there for 13 years when they offered me early retirement. And I accepted gratefully. It was a very generous package. And like I said, I'm pretty lazy anyway, so lots of time to be lazy now, but I've got a little pension, you know. It's nothing that's going to take me around the world, but hey, you know. Anyway, one of the best things that came of this alky relationship, you know, we always attract these people into our lives. I found out after I got into AA because the rocks in my head fit in the holes in theirs, you know. So, you know, I now have healthier relationships in my life. I do not get romantically involved with other AA members. Early in my sobriety, I did one time. Disaster. When it goes bad and you're speaking and he's sitting right there and the new girlfriend's there, you know, you want to jump and stomp all over my thoughts. It's never going to happen to me again. And it hasn't, you know. I'm not taking that risk. Not quite, you know, 100% well yet, you know. Anyway, so that has been a personal decision. I'm not against relationships. But for me, I don't seem to function well when the hormones are raging. And now I'm 65. No one ever comes home drunk and wants to jump my bones at 4 o'clock in the morning. A slice of heaven, my friend. You know? You'll know what I mean when you're 65. It's just wonderful. Anyway, one day, this is just a few years ago, I had this crystal clear moment. You know, we have little spiritual awakenings that don't make any noise or, you know, they just, little stuff falls into place. And all of a sudden it became so clear to me that the reason my mother called me Joyce was because to her I was a bundle of joy when I was born. And today, that's what I am to myself. You know, I'm a bundle of joy. And just everywhere I go, somebody says to me, you suit your name. I'm so grateful. I am just so, so grateful. And Bob, the man that I lived with, you know, after I left him, he just married the first lady who came along. And he drank himself to death. He was 57 years old. So I know that alcoholism is a disease that can and it does kill beautiful people. And I have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of that spiritual condition. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a loving God of my own understanding, and that God often comes to me through literature and music. And early in my sobriety, when I was still in Naples, I was standing in a card store one time, and I was thinking, you know, like, I come to meetings and people say things that really mean something to me. Like, I don't know where I was mentally. Well, I know where I was, like I was all fuzzed up and drunk, but all of a sudden the world just became this wonderful place where there were messages in books and music, and it all started with just one day coming to a meeting. And all of a sudden, a song came on the radio. It was by Dinah Washington. And she was singing, "What a Difference a Day Makes." 24 little hours. And I thought, oh my God, I really know what that means now. 24 little hours, and my whole life turned around. If there are new people here, just keep coming back, a day at a time, a bit at a time, a step at a time, a tradition at a time. Just let time do its wonderful healing magic on you. And time takes time. And Dr. Don, who is a long-term member here in Montreal, was 91 years old, and he had 44 years of sobriety. And he said, sometimes people used to say to him, how does Alcoholics Anonymous work? And he used to say, very well. So I wish you all a happy 24 hours, and thank you for listening to me.